Just about 7:09 in the morning, you are listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks.
I'm Brian Edwards Tekert, and as of today, a drastic overhaul initiated by the Trump administration to the Title 10 program, Title X program. I'm not sure how to say that. Title 10, the federal program that provides grants for family planning and reproductive health, are going into effect after months of legal challenges were at least temporarily cleared by a federal appeals court. Critics are calling this a gag rule. It is going to prevent healthcare providers who receive the funding from referring women for abortion services, from discussing abortion as an option with pregnant patients. It's going to force outfits that might provide abortion services using their own money from having any kind of intermingling of the two activities. They'll have to have complete financial separation and, starting next year, physical separation of the services. This is causing a lot of organizations to start turning down the money that they use not only to provide reproductive health care, but a lot of preventive health care services as well. Joining us to discuss what the implications are, Jessica Mason-Piclo, Vice President of Law in the Courts for Rewire.News, where she oversees legal reporting and analysis and co-hosts the Boom Lawyered podcast. Jessica Mason-Piclo, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, how much money are we talking about here?
Oh, we are talking about millions and millions of dollars, and not just for Planned Parenthood, but for all sorts of organizations that provide comprehensive reproductive health care across the country. And so, you know, the state of California was one of the leaders in the charge against the bill and or against the Title 10 changes. And I believe in California alone, you're looking at several tens of millions of dollars. So this is not an insignificant amount of money.
And what are the actual implications for the day-to-day practices for organizations like Planned Parenthood?
So you mentioned the litany of restrictions that the administration has enacted and is starting to enforce now. What this means on a day-to-day basis is quite simply that physicians will not be able to do their job to the way that they should be able to. So if you are a patient who goes to a Title 10 clinic and you are in need of an abortion for whatever reason, you will not have that option even brought up. You may not even know that option exists because that is something that your physician at that clinic can no longer even discuss with you. If it's something even medically indicated, let's say you're in the middle of having a miscarriage, for example, like all sorts of horrific, you know, when we talk about the attacks on reproductive health, oftentimes folks are dismissed as being hysterical or trying to, you know, create these sort of nightmare scenarios. And the nightmare is here right now. Doctors will not be able to do their jobs. Patients will receive substandard health care as a result of it. And this is all because of a political agenda. And it's going to impact the most vulnerable communities. It's designed to do that. And it's, you know, we talk about this as an attack on reproductive health care. It's also very much an attack on low-income people.
But and to that point, I mean, Planned Parenthood, of course, will take a hit. They also, however, are a huge institution that has a very large donor base, right? And I imagine a lot of that donor base will step up. What about these smaller institutions that specifically are serving low-income communities, communities of color, who don't have that kind of donor base and are really reliant on federal funding to keep their doors open?
There are lots of very difficult questions and conversations happening in those clinics across the country right now, not just because of this gag rule that we've mentioned, which is in effect immediately, but also because of these separation requirements, which will take place down the road. The idea that if you are an independent clinic who also has the ability to dispense medication abortion, for example, you would now, under these requirements, should they all remain in effect, be forced to open up an entire separate facility to provide medication abortions. And I've been on this show before to talk about how difficult it is to access abortion care and you know, the strife it takes to open clinics. Opening a new clinic is not something that you can just like go down and sign a lease and, you know, all of a sudden, hey, we got a new reproductive healthcare clinic. It's simply just, it's not that simple. So, you know, you are absolutely right. right. Planned Parenthood as an organization is much better positioned to absorb this hit. But when you are talking about smaller clinics or even, you know, hospitals, for example, who participate this in rural areas, there are going to be large swatches of the country where patients will not be able to get comprehensive reproductive health care through the Title X program. And the Title X program is designed specifically to provide low-income people with access to comprehensive reproductive health care.
Can you kind of walk us through the path here? This implementation comes after an appeals court cleared injunction that was restraining this from going into effect.
Right. So there are several lawsuits across the country challenging these Title X changes. And the bulk of the litigation is happening on the West Coast. There is litigation also in the East Coast. So the state of Maryland right now has a separate injunction that is blocking the requirements for clinics in that state. So you can already see that this is sort of a nightmare scenario if we were to have states with injunctions blocking it and then others that not. But the path is this. There are legal challenges broadly that are challenging this. A lower court had issued an injunction. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals had reversed that and said that the rule can take effect while the legal challenges proceed. So we still have the litigation ongoing. And so there is a possibility that that we would get a substantive ruling on the merits that block these. But really the only path to finality on this is via the Supreme Court. And we have a conservative majority on the Supreme Court who would uphold the Trump administration regulations. I mean, when John Roberts, for example, was in the Department of Justice when he was a lawyer in the Bush administration, he argued for the constitutionality and the appropriateness of these identical restrictions and eventually would want that. So, the challenge with the Title X fight is that, and we've seen this historically before when Republicans have tried to enact this, is the answer, unfortunately, is not through the courts. It's going to be through Congress, and Congress can undo this if it wants, and the agencies can undo this if they want. Democrats would have to be elected and in power for that to happen.
And in the middle of all of this, Planned Parenthood's president, Leanna Wen, was ousted after just 8 months on the job. Your thoughts about the reasons why and the timing of all of this when it seems like they would need their leadership, you know, strong, intact, and ready to move forward?
This is a really the timing of Wen's departure and the process of it is really unfortunate, I think, because you're absolutely right. We are in the midst of a huge political fight over reproductive health care, and we are, you know, careening into the 2020 presidential elections. And this is a time when we need the political muscle of Planned Parenthood Federation of America doing what it does best, which is rallying in the states and getting folks out to the polls to support reproductive health care. So this move is unfortunate. Now, you know, in terms of the reasons why, you know, what's been reported is that the organization had concerns that Dr. Wen was not aggressive enough in defending abortion rights and had backed away from abortion as comprehensive reproductive health care and was looking to put a focus on other aspects of Planned Parenthood services. And if that's true, and if that's the case, then, you know, I think that's an important conversation for Planned Parenthood to be having. They take up a very challenging space in reproductive health care, and they are enormous and have lots of resources. And when at a time when abortion rights and reproductive rights have never been more threatened legally, we need their muscle. The timing of it and how they will move forward, though, quite frankly, it's kind of a mess.
Planned Parenthood clinics, from what I can gather, and they're independent entities on a state-by-state basis generally, but they have been announcing that they'll turn down the Title X funding as a consequence of these rules going into effect. I'm curious, like, overall, what do you think cutting ties to federal funding, what kind of effect does that have on the organization? Does it make it you know, more of a political scrapper? Does it make it more conservative? Like, how does it change their institutional priorities?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really excellent question, because you, in some ways, have more freedom when you are untethered from the carrot and stick approach of the federal government and its grant money in, you know, as we're seeing here. And we are seeing more and more clinics declare that they will be just pulling out of the Title X program. So, you know, what that means for them is perhaps they have the ability to be a little scrappier in the fight. But what it means for patients is the folks who remain in the clinic are likely going to be not dedicated to providing comprehensive reproductive health care. So it won't just be that there are clinics who decide that they can abide by the gag rule, for example. What we've seen with this administration is, for example, prioritizing family planning dollars to those organizations that teach abstinence only in terms of part of their in part of the delivery of services. So patients will be funneled into substandard clinics. And that is something that I think is really important, because it's not just talking about abortion care. We are talking about folks who receive a significant amount of their primary care through Title X clinics. Mm. You know, the Title X provides family planning services, yes, but for low-income patients, they are often the first and sometimes only point of accessing healthcare generally.
Mm-hmm. So on the end of which clinics will keep taking the money, move them to kind of more conservative healthcare providers. On the side of what about the clinics that have started turning it down? Do they become more specialized around abortion care and cut out, like, you know, the STI screenings, the pap smears, and so forth?
I mean, I don't think so, just because the reality is, you know, abortion care isn't a significant amount of people's business either, right? Federal funding already prevents dollars from going to pay for abortions. Many states have parallel restrictions on that. Abortion care is not a huge moneymaker, and it doesn't provide massive amounts of time and services in these clinics. It's important, yes, and it is a part of their business, absolutely. But so is providing cancer screenings. So is providing well women checks, and those happen much more frequently. So on the one hand, yes, there is the possibility that they may just by nature of the squeeze on the pipeline, I guess is how I would put it, end up, you know, doing more of those types of services if patients are funneled specifically for that. But, you know, again, this is an attack on the entire model, because when those financial separation requirements start to take effect, independent clinics are going to struggle to be able to meet those. And, you know, then we will be talking about really getting folks who are having to decide between providing any kind of comprehensive reproductive health care or limiting that services to keep the doors open. And, you know, those are not good choices for providers to be put in.
When we've had this conversation before, Jessica, we've talked about things that, like, people aren't thinking about, meaning like the ripple effect, right? So people stop having access to the care that they need. We're talking about increases in STIs. We're talking about increases in HIV. We're talking about the impact on financial systems and families, particularly, you know, Black and brown and Indigenous communities. Can you just sort of follow that thread a little bit? Like, this isn't just about right now, today. This is about long-term impacts on the overall health and stability of communities.
Absolutely. One of the things that we have with the Title X program is data. We have data that shows that access to comprehensive health care, including reproductive health care, is an upward trajectory, right? Like, this is an overall societal good, and that the Title X program is very effective at this. It's one of the best social safety programs that we have. And so this ripple effect, you're absolutely right. We will see folks who are unable to get care that they need. And then we will also see the public health impact of that down down the line. So we're not just talking about perhaps folks ending up carrying to term pregnancies that they would not otherwise carry to terms. We're talking about folks who would be delayed in getting a cancer screen and diagnosis, right? And so we know that when you have something like cervical cancer, that early detection is absolutely critical to good treatment outcomes. Well, this puts early detection at risk. And we already know that low-income patients, and particularly patients of color, have worse health outcomes simply by all of the racism baked into the cake of our system, not just our healthcare system, but our economic system, all of it, right? Like, we know that that impacts public health. And so what the Trump administration has done is just put its boot on this to make that worse. It's pushing it down, and so it will flatten out those health outcomes. And so we will see low-income communities fare overall worse in their health outcomes, and not just specifically related to reproductive health care. Because again, like we've said, look, for low-income patients, Title X clinics are often the primary point of accessing health care. So they are going to a Title X clinic, not just for a well woman check, but because, you know, they are also getting a flu shot, for example. And so these are, you know, this is really the one of the most pernicious effects, I think, of the Trump administration's attack here, is because when we force people into cafeteria-style healthcare, which is what a gag rule does, right? You cannot go to one place to get all of what you need. You need to go here, you need to go there, you need to go to this other place, see a different doctor. We know that those follow-ups, that those extra steps are always harder for low-income folks to complete, just because there's, you know, you've got extra transportation considerations, all of those things. And so this is a choice. This is a political choice to make life unhealthier and more difficult for low-income communities.
Jessica Mason-Piclo, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jessica Mason-Piclo is Vice President of Law in the Courts for Rewire.News, where she oversees legal reporting. She's also co-host of the podcast Boom Lawyered. And again, the news, if you're just joining us, the Trump administration's overhaul to Title X funding rules, what critics are calling a gag rule that would restrict physicians who work at clinics that receive that funding from even discussing abortion with their patients. Those rules are going into effect after a federal appeals court at least temporarily cleared the injunctions that had been restraining them. That takes us to 7:26 in the morning. The program's up front. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
My name is Kat Brooks.
And we're going to turn now to immigration struggles. Lawyer for a Bakersfield college student and farm worker are challenging his detention, calling it a violation of the First Amendment. Jose Bello was detained 3 days after reading a poem that criticizes the federal government's immigration and detention policies. Christopher Martinez has the story.